Hey, it's Ash. Now, today's guest is Adam Livesay, co-founder of Elevate IoT. You want to be sure to stick around to the end to hear key factors that enabled Adam to not only work his way up within a company, but eventually spinning off and starting a company with his former boss. Welcome to Season 3 of ExecuTalks. It's the podcast that connects you with today's top executives. You will hear interesting childhood stories, stories of extreme setbacks and disappointments, and ultimately hear the story behind how these top executives were able to build an amazing career for themselves. Adam was born and raised in Marysville, Washington, a town 1 hour north of Seattle. His father was an entrepreneur and football coach, and his mother was a principal at a local high school. Growing up, sports were a big part of Adam's life. It taught him the importance of winning and losing collectively, the importance of teamwork, and the importance of leadership.
So I grew up north of Seattle in a town called Marysville, Washington. It's north of Everett. I had divorced parents. Both did a great job co-parenting. My mom was a principal at a local high school, Snohomish, Washington. My dad had a small real estate business, an escrow company, and he was a coach at our local high school for football. So it was kind of a neat childhood in the fact that I got to see some entrepreneurship, I got to see some leadership in the community, I got to see teamwork, like all that type of stuff, and it was a nice combination of role models that were also parents. My dad's mom, she lived a few miles away from us with our aunt and uncle. And she was an immigrant here from Japan, post-World War II, married my grandpa, who was a vet, very tied into the U.S. culture and very tied into the history of Japan. And so it was a really interesting combination. Big into family, big into the hierarchy of family, that if your dad said 2 + 2 = 5, 2 + 2 = 5, right? So discipline. And then she was really big into sports. You know, she was my 8-year-old Japanese grandmother who would watch the Mariners every game all the time, come to all of our sporting events and stuff. So I think she had probably the biggest influence for us growing up.
So what were the principles that you feel your grandmother kind of passed down to you?
The family unit aspect. This doesn't necessarily need to be just to your biological family, but you have this tight group that you can always rely on really positives, really lows, or sometimes just to kind of check your ego into place if you need to be checked. I think having that core group is really important through this journey, for sure.
Adam always had an interest for math and science, so he pursued a computer science degree from Portland State University. And after college, he landed a job for a company that helped manufacturing facilities upgrade their electronics and software to help them be more effective. Now, he started to make observations about technology and its advancements. New technology in general, like smartphones, are constantly being innovated and updated. Think about it. You probably get a smartphone upgrade, every 2-3 years. So he realized that this was not the case in manufacturing. There are places he would go where the technology hadn't even been updated for over a decade. At this point, he realized that there was a real opportunity to start advancing the technology in the manufacturing industry.
I remember just having these memories like, why is this like this thing that they're building for an airplane? And I go into an airplane and I rent a movie and I put in my headphones and hear this massive thing that's staying in the air from here to New York. Why is like this company that's building it have like zero technology? Like it didn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then I remember going to another company and it had like all this automation and all this technology. And I remember just kind of thinking to myself, okay, software is going to disrupt this industry or it's going to enhance it, but no one's talking about it. All my friends are going to work at Microsoft, they're going to work at Amazon or whatever the case is. But nobody was talking about how do we build better software for manufacturing. And I didn't know what that meant, but I just knew I wanted to learn more about it. And I really wanted to understand was like, how could I learn to build technology that could improve like this? You know, if Boeing ever left the Pacific Northwest, we would be like, you know, we always talk about Microsoft and Amazon, but Boeing, that supply chain is incredible. And so why is one of the biggest supply chains of manufacturing so outdated? And not outdated by a few years, like 20 years, a ton of our friends, parents either worked for Boeing or worked for companies that supplied to Boeing. And I was always shocked how some businesses were automated and had technology implemented to the tilt. It was amazing. And then other businesses were super dirty and old and manual and everything again. And I just remember thinking, like, if our cars, since I can remember cars made this big advancement, that it has to start happening inside the manufacturing world. And so that made me really interested, was how can we take technology here and put it into like older industries.
And what was your first job out of college?
It was in fluid power. So it was in Western Integrated, and I was actually interning there. I went to Portland State because they had a facility in Portland, and I worked in the shop. So I worked the field service, I worked the shop, worked the warehouse. I just kind of got to know. So I'm learning all this like fundamental physics laws and math and all this like theoretical stuff, but then I'm touching like the nuts and the bolts and everything. And at that time in my life, like, all I want to do is get in the engineering department, right? So like all I want to do was get out of the 6 a.m. factory shift and get into the 8 a.m. engineering shift, because I could sleep an extra 2 hours and or whatever the case was, or not be in the cold and stuff. But looking back at it, it was awesome because it gave me a real understanding of the issues that manufacturing runs into, like the real nuts and bolts. Like I was dealing with bits and bytes, and they're dealing with nuts and bolts.
So obviously that was your first experience in the corporate world. What were some eye-opening things about that experience?
So a couple of things that were pretty eye-opening to me. One is, it's not easy to change something, even though it might be obvious to have it changed, right? A lot of processes inside a company to get a process changed, like a lot of different decision makers to say, yes, we need to do this. The domain experts that were on the factory floor that knew what the issues were and what was causing them issues to complete a job or have it be accurate, whatever the case was, didn't necessarily result in change happening from like the back office down, right? And that took, I thought it'd be very easy. You know, a young kid, like, oh, you'd have a meeting, you'd plan, you'd implement the plan, but it seemed like other stuff would be prioritized over it or whatever the case is. I thought that was really eye-opening to me, because that just let me know again that that's one of the reasons the industry wasn't changing, was it was very much we've always done it this way type mentality through the whole industry. The other piece that was pretty eye-opening to me in manufacturing, there weren't a lot of young people interested in it. And so I had this really unique visibility working in field service in the shop, that I got to go out on customer locations, and our customers did the coolest stuff, right? They could do anything from a company that built landing apparatuses for surveillance drones, to garbage truck companies, to street sweeping companies, to the company that transports SpaceX rockets all around the United States. And the stuff that built that was really in the manufacturing fluid power. And I would think this was like one of the coolest customers I'd see, right? Like, holy cow, we're just at SpaceX and we got to see all this cool technology. My college classmates had no desire. I started to see this major recruitment and employment gap coming, which was, wow, this industry is not like sexy. People aren't interested to get into it, but they do incredible things and they're lacking technology. And so for me, it was like a dream, because I'm like, holy cow, if I can learn this stuff, I can start to determine. And I wasn't thinking it from an entrepreneur perspective. I was thinking it from a career trajectory perspective, which was, if I can bring new technologies that we can implement as a company, this will be really good for my own personal career growth.
Interesting. I guess one thing that I just kind of thought of, what tips would you give somebody who's new in the corporate world, you know, very early in their career, still new, what tips would you give them on selling their idea internally, if you will, like if they have an idea for a project or some kind of new venture, what are some tips you would give to communicate their ideas better?
So this is something that I've been thinking about a lot over the last few years, is you really have to understand who you're communicating with and how they like to absorb information. So some people like to absorb information on very long emails and reports and pictures and diagrams. And I think anytime you're selling up to management leadership, you need to understand how they absorb it. Other folks, one page, one slide PowerPoint, tell me what it is. Like, and so if you don't understand who your audience is to deliver that information, the information can be the best information out there and it might just it might just fall through the cracks. And so I think a lot about that in the business world, depending on who we're going to be communicating with internally and externally. And then I think the other piece to it too is understanding a little bit of the company politics, right? So you're going to have to get a champion. If you're just starting out in your career or you're mid-level, you got to build a champion, right? You got to build someone that is going to go to bat for you. And typically what they're going to, typically I believe, I'm like you, I'm an optimistic. I believe that most people want most people to be very successful, right? They're there to really empower people. And so I think that but I think also people like to be showed, not told. So I think if you're new into a corporation, you want to show your desire, your passion to change the stuff, and somebody inside the organization will latch onto that, right? I also think it's a positive way to do it and a negative way to do it. And I think positivity is going to attract a lot more champions than a negativity, right? Saying, oh, this way is horrible and I don't know why you do this. Well, you're not getting a lot of people to listen to you. Walls automatically go up. If you're positive about it, I always say AP, all positive. I try to be positive like all the time because you have no idea like what's going around for this to be this way. Mm-hmm. And then once you get that opportunity to communicate it, know how your audience is going to consume it. Because if your CEO or your VP wants a one page, PowerPoint presentation, one slide on it, you better figure out how to get that information across in one slide. If they want to read a 3-page report on it, and I know a lot of executives like to do it that way. I mean, Amazon, right? 5-page reports, no PowerPoints. Write everything out. Get that out there. Know how to deliver the information.
You've obviously been very successful in working your way up the ladder, if you will. You've been successful in the corporate environment. What do you feel like enabled you to do that? Like, what was it, if you could kind of pinpoint it?
After graduating, I went from the shop and service and manufacturing to basically a design engineer up in the engineering department. One of the engineers left, and there was an opportunity to get into a control position that was going to be in the field with customers, but I was still pretty young. But I felt like I had two things. One, I had no problem getting on the road at 5 a.m. and driving down to Medford, Oregon to meet with a customer with the sales team, because I've been doing that inside the shop all the time, right? So like already, I think just that attitude again was a big deal. Like people kind of saw that I had no problem getting my hands dirty and climbing on machines and stuff like that. Two, there was an inflection point in technology. And again, we're going to see this everywhere we go, especially as a young person, right? A young person, any corporation is going to bring in technologies either that are for the industry or their tools that the industry can use or whatever, and they have a chance to implement it. And so I was able to dive into this technology and really absorb it. One of the really powerful things we have as young folks is we don't have as many responsibilities as we do when we get older. And so you have a lot of time to dive in and learn everything you can about the company, the customers, the products. Like you can't be over-prepared. You have to be over-prepared because you lack it with experience and you lack it with domain expertise, right? So you have to be able to know enough. And then I think one of the best advices I ever received was for a guy that retired while I was in the shop. And it's industry advice now that we all take for granted. But when you're young in your early 20s, and he says, if you don't know the question, don't give them an answer. Tell them you'll go back and get the answer and come back. I think as a young person, it's really hard to do. And I know I made this mistake a few times, but the customers you work with find a lot of maturity in that, to know this person doesn't know everything and they will go find me the answer. And that builds up a ton of credibility and trust.
So as Adam was interacting with customers and helping them upgrade their technologies and their manufacturing facilities, they began asking Adam and his company if they could somehow relay the information from the new machines they were installing back to their computers through the internet. Adam and one of the business owners at his company went on a quest to validate the market. So they began interviewing customers with manufacturing facilities all over the country, asking them if this is something they also wanted. So Adam and one of the owners of the company decided to spin this idea out as a separate business called Elevate IoT. Elevate IoT helps manufacturing facilities connect their devices through the internet and makes sure information is being relayed in real time so that all employees in the facility understand what's happening in real time.
What I was finding was when I was out there, these customers would just start telling me a ton of either problems or opportunities. And that would allow us to start having a lot more increased sales. And so in our industry, I was like, whoa, we are on to something here that we have one application engineer myself, really, because everyone else is kind of design engineers, that's going out there and uncovering a ton of opportunities. And not because it was something I was saying or doing, it was a relationship change with the customer. So the proposal I gave to our company was, why don't we have two or three of these application engineers? Why don't we all work together as a team? And why don't we be driven by a manager? And our whole goal will be able to try to get find new opportunities, new solutions, new deployments, hand that back off to design engineering. So a typical sales engineering type squad. It's never been done this way before. We were bringing a whole spin on it, which I believe comes from, you know, from our, my generation, the younger generations, which are teamwork, team building, collaboration, all that stuff. We're bringing this now to an industry that is like really has desires to innovate, but they've never had that before. And so that got me into the business development side and eventually like the business unit, like management side. And it wasn't easy. It was a ton of hard work, a ton of long hours, understanding customers and industries and working nights and weekends and everything. But I think that's kind of what your 20s are made for.
So the way I understand it is that Elevate IoT, the company that you co-founded, was essentially a spinoff from Western Integrator, the company that you were working at before. How did you and your partners decide to spin it off? Like what went through that decision? And how did you know it was the right time to do that?
We started seeing an inflection point happen. And the inflection point was as customers were having us put in more advanced technologies on the machines, they're asking for that information to be transmitted back to their corporate offices, basically. So IoT, right? They're trying to get like, can you connect my machine to the internet so I can make business decisions off of that data? And when this was happening, we looked at it initially as, holy cow, we can really grow our sales in Western Integrated because we're gonna be the only people with this product. And that's what we did. We did it for about a year. And we had not what Elevate is today, but we had a very kind of integrated thing. But it was winning business, and it was really early on in the whole deal. Well, it started to get some of our big suppliers' attentions, like big Fortune, like 200 companies, saying, what is it that you guys are doing at Western Integrated? Because the customers are loving this. And so then we started saying, me internally, I started thinking like, okay, is this bigger than just Western Integrated? Can we roll this out? And one of the owners, who's also my co-founder, Bill, we spun this out as a separate company eventually, but we didn't do it overnight. What we did was, hey, Adam, if we want to spin this out, there's a ton of work that needs to be done. We need to validate it. We need to figure out, we want to make sure that we can build a business off of it, not a product. So while we're growing this business rapidly fast inside WIT, I was also working a ton on research. So market validation, customers, you name it. Then we finally said, let's go do a trip back to the Midwest and find out if this is really a Pacific Northwest thing. And are we tied into technology and the cloud and all the stuff that's happening out here? Or do people want it all over the country? Well, sure as heck, everybody wanted it. And they said, not only do they want it, their customers are asking for the same thing. And then from there, we made a strategic decision to land a Fortune 250 company and have them be our first customer. And we wanted to make sure that we could deploy the technology, they white label it, they resell it to their customer base, and they're going to put their name on it. And if that happens, then we have the stamp of this thing has real legs, because a Fortune 250 is not going to put it under their largest customers unless everything works and it provides the ROI that they need. So it was but to do that jump, like you're leaving a pretty fast trajectory inside a corporation. And to go do this, like you said, it's a lot of long hours and it's a lonely road for sure. And I think my family, like we do like some, you know, family is a really big piece of me growing up, as we talked about earlier. So they'd want you to come to these family, like, you know, weekends or whatever the case is, once a year, twice a year. But I would be working, right? So I'd have, like, I remember being at Cape Cod and there being a, all seeing our cousins back east, and everyone's at the beach, and I'm in the car on meetings with that big Fortune 250 company because we're making sure everything's going to work well, and we have a 2.5 hour meeting. And so you make those sacrifices, right, to get there. I also saw how it's changing manufacturing. So as you said, we really want to help people out. I could really see that the technology we were delivering was having an absolute impact on manufacturing. And when I look back on my career, my life, whatever, I want there to be a chapter that I was part of that was really about this evolution that's happening. And I knew we were onto something. And so the question was, did I want to do it locally or do I want to do it more globally? And I really thought that we could drive this at a global scale and change, you know, hundreds if not thousands of industrial companies.
So Adam, I want to switch gears here just for a second. I guess some of our audience members feel like they're kind of stuck. They're in this career rut, like they're stuck. They feel stuck, right? Like they're not sure what to do. What advice would you have to somebody in their mid-20s that is feeling a little stuck right now?
I'm a big believer, as we talked about earlier, that we're all builders of stuff, right? We want to build careers, we want to build businesses, we want to build communities, churches, like you name it, right? Like families, like we want to build stuff. It's in our DNA to build stuff. And so I think a lot of the time we might be confused on what we think people expect us to build and what we want to build. And I think that takes a lot of honest discussions with yourself, right, about that, to understand. I have worked with people inside the companies that we work with that are some of the most intelligent, passionate people I've ever met, that are very good leaders, but they've chose not to do that inside their career. They've chose to do that with youth sports or with their church or something else. They have decided that they're going to have a purposeful career, but it might not be with the company they're at. It might be in a parallel path. And I think that's really interesting because I have a ton of respect for that type of person, because they're very self-aware, right? And for whatever reason, they love this piece of it, and which is opposite of the way I think. I want to build like companies and businesses and change like industry. But I have a ton of admiration by this. And I think it's something that that just because you might feel like you're in a rut in your career-wise, what are other parallel passions? The other thing is, I'm a big believer in reading, okay? I read a ton of books. I think there's something about, so two things. I think there's something about reading an actual book rather than reading it on my iPad or on my phone. I think there's something about that for me personally. I'm a big believer that sometimes you can read like three books that are kind of the same, and you take a little bit of piece out of, I mean, a topic, right? They're all attacking a topic, but you pick little nuggets out of it, and you're never going to get that aha magic pill overnight that's going to change everything. But when you look back at collective of a decade of reading, you built up a lot of perspectives and information that have allowed you to kind of mold how you think about stuff or approach stuff, right? So I think that for whatever reason, when we get out of school, we quit reading. And I have always believed that you got to continue read, especially if you're in entrepreneurship, especially if you're in leadership inside a company. If you're stuck inside you feel like your career rut, what are other things that you can start to look at that you might find super interesting, right? So is that freelancing? Is that looking to do side hustles like this? The whole deal. And I'd say the last piece of it is getting perspective that it's a long game. That just because if you're 25, like, again, I think back to my grandma, you're 25, they just came back from World War II, they're in Oklahoma, you know, we're 25 in a career and watching Netflix on our parents' couch. Like, those are two completely different scenarios. So having perspective on it a little bit is always good. You know, I think it's always good to kind of gut check that. Like we live in this really, I'm reading a book right now called Irresistible. I don't know if you've heard of this book, but it's about our dependence on technology and about how these companies are really good at getting you to like stuff more and share stuff and this and check stuff. You spend so much time on your phones.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting book, but I think about this and I go, we're in one of the most interesting times in the history of the world where if I wanted to go read about Tesla, I have everything I could possibly want to read about Tesla in the palm of my hand at 5 a.m. when I get up. But I could also just scroll Twitter for like 20 minutes and waste 20 minutes of my life, right? So I think harnessing that power is going to be our biggest challenge and opportunity for folks. And if they can figure out how to do it, then I think you'll have a leg up on the majority of the rest of the people inside your career.
Hey guys, thank you for sticking around and listening to Adam's story. We are now at the last segment of our show called Connection Section Questions, where we ask questions that allow you to get to know our guest on a much deeper level. So Adam, if you could go back and talk to your 25-year-old self, what advice would you give to yourself?
Three pieces of advice. One, play more golf. Two, I would say that your personal health and nutrition is like key. I definitely did not stay as healthy as I could have for a big portion of my career. And I realized later on in life that the more that I'm rested, the more water I have, the more nutrition I have, the higher function I am, right? So don't use being busy as an excuse not to be healthy. And then three, I'd say like empathy. Like I think when we're young and we want to go blaze the world, it's easy not to be empathetic about situations because you're very targeted on where you want to be. And I think empathy ends up being a really big role that that we all learn later on in life.
What in your life do you feel like has given you the greatest sense of fulfillment?
I think that we have a great community, and that has made me feel very, I don't even know if half my family and friends even know what we do. Like, I think it's all about like just like being people together. So that's like very good.
So obviously you have a long career ahead of you. You're still early in your career, but kind of foreseeing the future, if you could be remembered for just one thing towards the end of your career, what would you want to be remembered for?
I would say that what I did came from passion. I really was a passionate person.
In your opinion, what is the most important life skill?
Listening. Like, I think listening, and you probably have seen this on a lot of your guests that are CEOs of companies, and they're just such great listeners, and they really hear what you're saying, and they're interested. I mean, being present with that person and really listening to that person. I'm always super impressed when I leave a conversation with someone, I'm like, wow. Like, they were really like interested in listening. That is something that I've seen CEOs that have been mentors of mine, some that are phenomenal at that and some that are not. And you can tell the difference between the people.
What is the best advice that someone has ever given you?
When we grew up as kids, my dad would tell us before sports, what I had, I gave, and what I kept was lost forever. And so that was basically, you're going to go out there and you're going to go play a match or a game. And if you take a play off, you never get that play back. So what I had, I gave, and what I kept was lost forever. And I think about that all the time in so many things, because we don't get do-overs and time is a real thing. And whatever you're going to put into it, you're going to get out of it. And so that piece is like drilled into my DNA.
And then the last one is, if you were stranded on an island and had access to one meal, what would that meal be for you?
Breyers mint chocolate chip ice cream.
For real?
For real, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so, so much for listening. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It only takes a few seconds, but it's worth so much to us. We are helping new professionals in a very unique way, and we need people to hear about it. We need you to help us reach more people by leaving us a rating and review. I hope to see you again next week.